Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Basil Free, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, taking a deep dive into the Writing Place, love and loss in We Live in Time, dealing with death, and this week's A New Sports Report. Those stories and more tonight on WNUR News at 6. Struggling under the weight of endless midterm and final papers, job applications, and more, reporter Gabby Schell looks into one of the university's most useful, if not most used, resource. Here's more on The Writing Place.
Tucked away inside CORE in Maine sits The Writing Place, a resource for students who want an extra set of eyes on their writing, whether that's a paper, an application, or a story. 50 years ago, then-Professor Wallace Douglas and graduate student Bob Gundlach, later a Northwestern professor himself, came up with the idea for The Writing Place after noticing many students hadn't yet developed college-level writing skills. Originally, The Writing Place functioned as a drop-in clinic with workshops on grammar, composition, and different paper styles. However, nearly half a century later, the model has shifted. Now, The Writing Place is a hub for peer-to-peer tutoring, where trained juniors and seniors help other students work their way through formulating, drafting, and revising their papers and beyond. The peer-to-peer model has been so successful that the program has even expanded to include a separate service for graduate students.
Getting feedback from peers is just qualitatively different than, you know, getting feedback from mentors or professors or things like that, that it's easier to ask questions and be vulnerable and just chat with someone sort of on the same level when they're your peer.
That was Elizabeth Lenigan, the founding director of the Graduate Writing Place. Lenigan began her career with the Writing Place when she was a graduate student at Northwestern herself, and noticing the utility of the Writing Place's multifaceted support for undergraduates, pushed for the creation of an entire graduate student-run program. While the Writing Place primarily helps students with papers, whether they be short reflection pieces, final papers, or full dissertations, they serve whatever writing needs their clients may have.
Writers come in with all sorts of things. We see, especially in the fall, a lot of people coming in with materials for the job market, for instance, because people who are applying to be professors elsewhere are doing it now to start next fall. So, you know, they would come in and we work sort of synchronously together.
This interdisciplinary approach to writing coaching makes the Writing Place popular with the students it serves. Communication second year Ellie Cato, a self-described Writing Place devotee, highlights the versatility and skill of the tutors across different writing styles.
There's nothing they can't do in what I've seen. I've gone to them with like research papers. I've gone to them with analytic papers. I even went a few weeks ago to help with an application.
This versatility isn't necessarily because the Writing Place employs tutors across every discipline for when the need arises. Instead, tutors approach every kind of writing with a general approach that asks the writer to examine their own strengths and weaknesses as they hone their message. Weinberg third year and Writing Place tutor Andre Rocker explains.
You might come in with a piece of writing and think, this is too wordy, right? I don't know if I'm being direct or clear enough. What I want to do when I'm working with the writer is help them understand why they are having that light go off. So like, what in your mind, what in your previous education has caused you to identify what you're writing as too wordy? And all at the same time, you know, I also want to help you recognize your own strengths.
By asking writers to critically reflect on both their ideas and their skill set, tutors help the students that come in strengthen their pieces on their own. For Cato, this more reflective, discussion-based approach to tutoring was what got her hooked.
I have all these ideas and I need someone to bounce the ideas off of or to help weave them together. And I was surprised like how much I got done in just that 1 hour session, and it kept me going back.
But what does that look like? For Rocker, it's helping his tutees find their passion and interest within the constraints of the assignment.
So I'll sort of ask you a question like, what do you like so far about the thesis you've written? You know, and hopefully we get beyond something like, oh, well, it answers the prompt. Right? Maybe it's something about like, you're able to shape this assignment, this one assignment, into something that you really wanted to talk about for a long time.
By shaping the conversation to focus on his 2D's interest, Rocker aims to refocus the notion of academic writing as something done for just a grade, to be instead about the pursuit of knowledge, inspiration, and intellectual passion. When students come to engage in debate, to expand their thought, and to improve their writing and communication skills, everyone, 2Ts and tutors alike, benefit. By cultivating the writing place into something more than just transactional, tutors like Rocker hope that the service can be a catalyst for growth.
You're going to grow, I think. Like I mentioned that the moments of, you know, the things that spark change aren't necessarily just like big events. If you get a 50 on your paper, your first paper in college, you probably will think, yes, maybe I need to change, right? But if you are, like anything else, if you are developing a habit of attempting to reach something different in who you are as a writer, you will then become that something different. And I think a great place to do that is at a place where the people staffing it are, you know, similarly inclined to improvement, so Northwestern students. Where it's free, you don't have to pay anything for us, and where we genuinely want to help, right? And yeah, you usually get a better grade, too, when you come to the Writing Place. So.
As tutors at the Writing Place hope to help grow each other and their fellow students as academics and as people, the Writing Self itself is looking to grow and evolve within the university. In the age of AI, it can be easy for students to overlook the utility of services like the Writing Place, Lenigan says. But as more students walk in the door and give the place a chance, she hopes they will realize how unique the Writing Place is and how valuable it is to the university.
I hope that it will continue to be flourishing and be a space where people, you know, continue to value the feedback and one-on-one assistance that they can get from other individuals. I think that, you know, like as AI is growing more and more popular, we see and read and hear a lot of things about how, you know, it can be a tutor and it can be, you know, and I think that, you know, we offer something unique.
But if the opportunity for better grades, one-on-one assistance, and intellectual discourse doesn't get you in the glass corridors, Rocker has something else that may entice you.
If you like the smart food popcorn, like the cheddar, white cheddar popcorn, you should also come to the Writing Place, because for some reason why, we provide snacks at the Writing Place, and yet somehow those are the only ones that aren't touched. And I don't know, like I feel like those are that's a pretty good snack.
So, as your writing deadlines, midterm and final papers, or internship and job applications roll around, keep the Writing Place in your back pocket. Maybe you'll walk out with new ideas, a better paper, or stronger faith in your own writing abilities. Or maybe you'll just walk out with a bag of white cheddar popcorn. Either way, a win in my book. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Schell.
We Live in Time, the A24 film starring Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield, premiered earlier last month. Here's Sydney Gaw with the story.
There is something that your daddy and I...
There's something that mummy and me want to...
We want to talk to you about. It's a bit serious, though. Yeah.
I watched We Live in Time opening weekend, and now, nearly a month later, I still feel the impact of this film on my life. The story of Alma and Tobias, played by Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield, respectively, is one during which you can't help but laugh, cry, and simply feel. Garfield and Pugh embody the raw vulnerability of their characters in a way that made it impossible not to feel connected to their aspirations, fears, desires, and convictions. We Live in Time released in American theaters October 11th. The A24 film starring Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh follows Tobias, a recently divorced corporate employee, and Almit, a chef and restaurant owner, after they meet in a chance encounter, when Almit accidentally hits Tobias with her car.
What's happened to my underwear?
Boy, I literally have no idea.
So sorry, but do we know each other?
Yeah, no. I ran you over. Alma, by the way.
Tobias.
We Live in Time is still playing in theaters. The film made over $232,000 opening weekend and over $18 million in the box office worldwide. It is currently ranked 78% on Rotten Tomatoes and 7.3 on IMDb. Since its release last month, the film has received overwhelmingly positive reviews from audience members. Here's Medill sophomore Redeema Kodaly on the movie's themes.
I thought the movie was beautiful. I think you don't see these type of movies that are very raw and real. I feel like this movie was like a true testament to that. And also about like true love, not just with romantic partners, but also the love you have with family.
Garfield and Pugh deliver a range of witty, thought-provoking, heartbreaking lines throughout the story. The director really delves into the character's emotionality, engaging viewers in a more nuanced exploration of how people imbue their lives and the lives of those around them with meaning.
I thought Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh both did amazing. I think there was a monologue that Florence Pugh had in the movie, and I thought that was one of the best parts of the movie, and I think that really moved the story in a whole another direction.
At the film's emotional climax, Pugh delivers a tear-jerking monologue about the pressure to be extraordinary during one's lifetime. She embodies the stress many women face in achieving a legacy they hope extends beyond motherhood.
I mean, did it ever occur to you that maybe I don't want to just be someone's dead f***ing mum? I mean, at this point, nothing terrifies me more than the thought of having her. Having nothing whatsoever to remember me by. And it's like there's this bit of me that is desperate for her to know that I didn't just give up. And wouldn't it be quite the thing if maybe one day she decided to look back on this time, she actually chose to look back on this entire godforsaken episode and thought, wow, that's my mum.
Weinberg freshman Lauren Palmer says she was also blown away by the actress's performance.
I think Florence Pugh is just able to unravel so many layers in such like a complex character, and in such sort of a shorter length film, like there's only 2 hours, but they accomplish so much in those 2 hours. And you also get to see sort of the family dynamics between Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield's character and their daughter, and you know, sort of like the real issues that go on in a marriage, especially when one of them is suffering from such a fatal disease and you know they only have a certain amount of time to live.
In contrast to the film's more serious focus on what it's like to navigate terminal illness, there's also some moments of intense joy and humor.
The gas station scene is so good. I mean, if you haven't seen it, like, please go watch. It's the funniest moment in the film. It's so chaotic. And I've never seen a birth executed like that before. You just have to see it. I can't even like do it justice, but it's so funny. It's such an iconic part of the film.
Communication sophomore Miranda Campbell says We Live in Time is reminiscent of other romantic comedy dramas that play with the structure of chronology.
It's very much like a modern rom-com, like very similar to like About Time, if you've ever seen that. I thought that like I would have liked to get to know the characters more. Like, obviously I really love Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield, but I really wanted to like know who they were outside of their relationship. But I thought it was very interesting the way that they do like these time jumps, and it was really well made, and I thought it was really great.
In the last moments of the film, we're given a glimpse of the legacy that extends beyond the characters and movie itself. We Live in Time is about the beauty of fleeting moments, of the ephemeral nature of existence, and the lasting impact of these experiences. We Live in Time urges us to re-examine how or with whom we spend our finite presence on this earth.
Whether we like it or not, the clock is ticking.
What's the rush?
Because I'm worried. There's a very distinct and real possibility that I am about to fall in love with you.
For WNUR News, I'm Sydney Gaw.
We're all gonna die. Literally no one lives forever. There will come a time when we each, individually, cease to exist. And I don't know about you, but to me that's a terrifying thought. And even though death happens all the time, I still find myself facing this sort of death anxiety about losing my family and friends or even my own death. But I'm not the only one, as Nick Jenkins, a therapist at Counseling and Psychological Services at Northwestern, notes.
We all rationally understand it, but until you go through it, it hits differently.
So how can we prepare ourselves for death or deal with it after the fact? How can we tackle the topic of death while still in life? Jenkins presents a possible first step.
I think part of it is to recognizing that a lot of these things is normal, and those feelings that people have are normal because you're going through something that is so huge.
And sometimes acknowledging those feelings may be enough for some people, which is great. But this isn't an issue with a one-size-fits-all type solution. So where can you go from there?
There's a misconception that people who have had someone die don't want to talk about it. And we think that if we bring it up, we're going to make things worse. And while that is true in some cases, almost always what I've found, especially after doing this, that people really want to talk about that.
That's Mel Kaiser, an artist who works for Northwestern's departments of art history and classics. She also helps start the Death Studies Research Workshop here at Northwestern. The group looks to create a space to address the topics of death and dying with a focus on learning more about what death means and can look like.
So just talking about it in these sort of academic settings is, it allows people to dip their toe into talking about death. And just by talking about it and saying it out loud, it tends to make people feel better.
The group has hosted reading groups, talks with various professionals who dabble in death, and even made a trip over to the Field Museum to see flesh-eating beetles. They also have an upcoming event in Austin, Texas this May, in which Kaiser and others will perform a funeral procession with a casket. But the catch?
There's no specific body or object that's in the casket so that people can come to mourn and grieve for whatever they need to mourn and grieve about.
So there are two other ways you can confront death, through an academic setting or through something more artistic. So again, if that works for you as a way to confront this big topic and the feelings associated with it, great! But if not, there are still other avenues. Another option is the Death Café. For those not familiar, death cafes originated in Switzerland around 2004. The goal of these events is to provide a space for group discussion about death without a sort of set agenda in a more relaxed atmosphere. And of course, cookies and tea and other typical cafe fare are also provided too. Alejandro Salinas runs some death cafe events in the Chicago area.
Even coming to a death cafe, people think it is very, it's gonna be like morbid or depressing. And we're often laughing and very curious and open and expressive and appreciative of life.
While the topic may seem grim, death cafes are able to give people a safe space to process death and hear different perspectives, which can then shift their own. And by having this space of reflection, people are able to take a look at what it means to live.
We talk so much about death, not because we're morbid or anything, but because we love life so much. And there's so much to live for and be excited about.
After interviewing Salinas, I actually attended the death cafe being held that night. And it was one of the most profound things I've ever experienced. It isn't for everyone, but at least for me, it helped me feel a bit better about my place in this world and appreciate all the people I have and the life I live. I got to hear what other people thought about death and the afterlife from their own experiences, which helped me shape my own perception of what it means to die. But more than anything, it made me want to put more care into how I spend my time and to make sure I'm appreciating all I've been given. But even if death cafes aren't for you, Salinas points out that there are still a multitude of ways to demystify death.
Just having any question, you know, even as simple as asking about your grandparents, you know, getting stories of the dead, honoring the dead, remembering the dead, or taking a walk in a cemetery is a really easy, simple way.
At the end of the day, though, death and our own relationship to it is a very personal thing. Nick Jenkins probably says it best.
There's no necessarily right way to grieve.
And yes, absolutely is a difficult thing to think about, but by confronting death and the question of what exactly it means to die head-on, someone can feel less scared and less alone when it comes to dealing with this unknown. Because yes, everybody dies, but everybody gets a chance to live too. It's up to us to what we do with that precious time. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Quesa.
It's officially crossover season at Northwestern. Fall sports are wrapping up, but winter sports are just getting underway. Brendan Prizman has the latest with a sports report.
Hi, I'm Brendan Prizman. The calendar is flipping in November, but one thing that isn't flipping is Northwestern's success in athletics. here's a look at the Wildcats' latest exploits in the world of sports. After nearly a month, Northwestern football finally has its second Big Ten win. The Wildcats struggled to finish, but eked out a 26-20 overtime win in their game over Purdue. Thanks to a great run by Joseph Heiman II, Northwestern held a 10-3 lead at the end of the first quarter. Late in the second frame, the Wildcats got yet another rushing touchdown. Cam Porter's one-yard scamper doubled the lead, and it seemed to be smooth sailing from there. Unfortunately, Purdue quickly responded behind a great drive from quarterback Hudson Card. The Boilermakers marched down the field and scored a touchdown just 25 seconds before the half to trim the deficit. The second half was much more defensively oriented, but the team still managed to trade field goals. The Northwestern lead held until just over 5 minutes left, when Purdue running back Devin Mockabee plunged into the end zone from a yard out to tie the game at 20. 60 minutes wasn't enough, and the dueling Big Ten squads went into overtime. The Boilermakers had the first opportunity, but couldn't do anything with it, and turned the ball over on downs. The Wildcats responded in just two plays, with Heiman catching a 22-yard touchdown pass from quarterback Jack Lausch to seal the deal on the victory. Following the bye this weekend, Northwestern will be back in action on the 16th against Ohio State at Wrigley Field. In cross country, the Wildcats had a great day at the Big Ten Championships in Champaign, Illinois over the weekend. In a hard-fought meet involving six top 25 teams, Northwestern took a well-earned seventh place. Ava Earle, the spectacular senior from Alaska, led the way, finishing the 6K in under 20 minutes for the first time in her career. Her time of 19:42.2 was good enough for 14th at the meet, and it also earned her a spot on the All-Big Ten's second team. Chloe Wellings nearly also broke 20 minutes, finishing in 20:05.7 for 33rd place. Maddie Whitman was the third Wildcat in the top 50, finishing in 47th with a time of 20:15.6. Both Ava Cornetti and Jackie Holman also set personal bests and finished in the top 60. Northwestern will be on the run again at the NCAA Midwest Regional in Peoria, Illinois, on November 15th. And finally, Northwestern men's basketball is back in action. Chris Collins' squad defeated Lehigh 90-46 on Monday night behind 26 points and 10 rebounds from Nick Martinelli. Four other Wildcats also scored in double figures, including Luke Hunger, who had 15 points off the bench. Northwestern out-rebounded Lehigh 45-26 and forced 12 turnovers, scoring 23 points off those giveaways. The Wildcats also made nearly 55% of their shots and canned 45% of their three-pointers. Northwestern also had 36 points in the paint. The victory was especially impressive given that Brooks Barnheiser didn't play and Ty Berry only scored 10 points. The Wildcats will face a stiff test this Friday when they travel to Ohio to take on the Dayton Flyers. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Brendan Prizman, WNUR News.
Taking a look into the headlines, Northwestern men's basketball all-time leading scorer Boo Booey signed a two-way contract with the New York Knicks yesterday. According to the Daily Northwestern, the two-way contract will allow Booey to play for the New York Knicks and their G League affiliate, the Westchester Knicks, this season. Under this contract, the 24-year-old will make half the rookie's minimum salary and be eligible to play in 50 of the 82 games in the NBA regular season. In Chicago news, Chicago Teachers Union-backed community organizer Ebony DeBerry prevailed in the crowded 2nd District School Board election, according to the Associated Press. She surpassed three other candidates in the most expensive race in the city's inaugural school board election. In national news, the 2024 presidential election took place yesterday, with former President Donald Trump securing re-election after a long-fought campaign battle against current Vice President Kamala Harris. Though all the votes have yet to be tallied, Trump has secured 295 electoral votes so far, far surpassing the 270-vote margin needed to clinch the win. Trump will be inaugurated for the second time on Monday, January 20th of next year. In international news, Ukrainian troops have for the first time engaged with North Korean units that were recently deployed to help Russia in the war with its neighbor, Ukraine's defense minister said yesterday. According to the Associated Press, the comments were the first official reports that Ukrainian and North Korean forces have engaged in combat, following a deployment that has given the war a new complexion as it approaches its 1,000-day milestone. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News. You can listen to these stories and more on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Mika Ellison, and our reporters are Gabby Shell, Sydney Ga, Sophia Kesa, and Brendan Preisman. From all of us here at WNUR News, thanks for listening. I'm Basil Free. Catch our next newscast on Friday, November 8th at 6 p.m. Now, back to scheduled programming.